The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
And CFD, we encourage you to come more than once because the services do vary a bit from week to week. And also, if you're new, we have a literature rack in the lobby, which we just restocked. So please feel free to review the brochures there and maybe learn a little bit more about Unitarian Universalism. So whoever you are, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whoever you love, we're happy that you're here with us for this hour. And now we will have the chalice lighting.
I'm Butch Larsenese, proud member of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. This is Wonder by Reverend Dr. David Breeden. We light this flame, reminding ourselves to treasure the magic in the mundane, the wonders of carbon dioxide, oxygen, nitrogen, rapid oxidation into light, heat, and the dance of flame. We light this chalice, kindling, remembering our innate sense of wonder at the very real magic of our world. Oh, and now we'll light the peace candle. May peace be with you. I knew you got it.
And now we will be lighting the Advent candles. Advent is the four Sundays before Christmas. And it's a season of anticipation. So Ryan is going to help me light the Advent candles today. Come on up, Ryan. So today we light the first candle for hope. That was the one we started with last week. And now today, the second one is for love. Thank you, Ryan. And now we have our gathering song. If you are able to stand in body or spirit, to please sing along. The song is Gathered Here.
Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Gather here in the struggle and the power, Spirit.
Today, for our Moment for All Ages, we have a video that I think is kind of cool. It shows some of my favorite scientists in it: Carl Sagan, Richard Feynman, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Bill Nye. So,
we're all connected to each other biologically, to the Earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomically.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man's. He's never gonna let us relax.
We live in an in-between universe where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them, laws of nature.
I'm this guy standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. Compared with a star, the planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the Earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomic.
I find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomenon in the cosmos. That makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in space, which is the light bouncing around the room, going from one thing to the other. And it's all really there, really, really there. But you gotta stop and think about it, about the complexity, and really get the pleasure. It's all really there, really, really there. The inconceivable nature of nature. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos and know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
The children may go to their classes. We can sing them out. Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. So today I'm going to read a brief story. It's from the Adult Religious Education curricula called Tapestry of Faith, and it's called The Mystic and the Scientist. One day, a religious man approached a mystic and asked, "Does God exist?" "Allow me to go within for an answer," the mystic replied. After meditating for quite some time, expanding her heart consciousness to embrace the totality of existence, she answered, "I do not know what you mean by the word God, but I do know that this world is more mysterious and more wonderful," I start getting emotional, sorry, "than I could ever imagine. I know that you and I are part of something so much larger than our own lives. Perhaps this something larger is what you seek." Then the religious man approached a scientist. "Does God exist?" he asked. "Let me think," the scientist replied. And so she thought. She thought about the vastness of the universe, 156 billion light years, or something like 936 billion trillion miles in diameter, and the almost immeasurable smallness of a quark. She thought of how the energy of the Big Bang fuels the beating of her own heart. And then she answered, "I do not know what you mean by the word God, but I do know that this world is more mysterious and more wonderful than I could ever imagine. I know that you and I are part of something so much larger than our own lives. Perhaps this something larger is what you seek." The religious man then thought to himself. He thought of what he knows and what he does not know. He thought about how he knows what he knows and how he knows he doesn't know what he doesn't know. He thought about his experience of the world and how it is but one tiny infinitesimal fraction of all experience. He thought about his dependence on forces larger than himself, and he thought about the interdependence of all existence. He experienced wonder and pondered mystery, and then he knew. He knew in his soul the truth of what the mystic and the scientist said, that he is part of something so much larger than his own life. And only then, did he think about what he'd call it. And now we will show a video. Hopefully you don't mind all these videos, but they're really good. And it's called Mysticism by Alan Watts, who is a writer and religious philosopher, if you're not familiar with him. So enjoy the video.
When I use the word mysticism, I'm referring to a kind of experience, a kind of, shall we say, state of consciousness, which seems to be as prevalent among human beings as measles. It's something that simply happens, and we don't know why it happens, and although there are all sorts of techniques which claim to be able to promote it, and which are more or less successful in doing so, and sometimes rather less than more. Nevertheless, there is this peculiar thing that happens to people. And it's been recorded as far back in time as we have any recording at all. And that is coming over people the peculiarly convincing sensation that their ordinary sense of individuality, of personal identity, is transcended. And the individual suddenly feels an experience that actually it could be described from a number of quite different points of view. But we could add up these dominant characteristics. that instead of the ordinary feeling that I, as an individual, confront a world that is foreign to me, that is not me, in this kind of experience, I find myself to be of one and the same nature or identity as the world outside me. In other words, I suddenly feel no longer a stranger in the world, but as if the external world were my own body. The next aspect of the feeling is even more difficult to assimilate to our ordinary practical intelligence, but a very overwhelming feeling that everything that happens, everything I have ever done, everything anybody else has ever done, was part of our harmonious design. That there is no error at all. And that's the sort of thing I'm referring to. Now, you see, I'm not talking about a philosophy. I'm not talking about a rationalization, some sort of theory that somebody cooked up in order to explain the world and make it seem a tolerable place to live in. I'm talking about a rather whimsical, unpredictable experience that suddenly hits people. And it includes this element of feeling the total harmoniousness of everything. Now, I realize that those words can carry with them a sort of sentimental feeling, a sort of Pollyanna feeling. There are various religions in our society today which try to inculcate in you the belief that everything is a harmonious unity. You know, things like Christian Science or the Unity Movement and so on. They want to make a kind of propaganda for one to believe, and through believing to feel, that everything is harmonious. Now, to my mind, that is a kind of pseudo-mysticism, because it's an attempt to make the tail wag the dog. To make the effect produce the cause. Because this sensation of things being harmonious somehow never brought about by insisting to yourself that that is so. Because when you do that, when you would say to yourself, all things are light, all things are God, all things are beautiful, etc. Actually, by doing that, you're implying that they're not. Because you wouldn't be saying all this stuff if you really knew it to be true. So this thing, the sensation of a kind of universal harmony, cannot come to us when it is sought, when we look for it as something to be an escape from the way we actually feel, or to compensate for the way we actually feel. It's a thing that comes out of the blue. And when it comes out of the blue, just like hiccups come out of the blue, it's overwhelmingly convincing. And it stands as, actually, the foundation for most of mankind's profound philosophical, mystical, metaphysical, and religious ideas. Someone, in other words, to whom this sort of thing has happened, and as I said before, it strikes us as measles may strike us, someone to whom this sort of thing has happened can't restrain himself when it has happened, and he has to get up and tell everybody about it. And alas, he becomes the founder of a religion. Because people say, look at that man, how happy he is. what conviction he has. He has no doubts. He seems to be sure in everything he does. You see, that's a wonderful thing about a great human being. He's like an animal or a flower. See, when a flower buds and the bud goes pop and opens, it has no hesitation or doubts about it. Or the chicken's egg breaks, the flower buds. There's no doubt about it at all. It comes forth. And so in the same way, when somebody has an experience of this kind, he just has to tell everybody about it. Because you see, he sees everybody around him looking dreadfully serious, looking as if they had a problem, looking as if the act of living were extremely difficult. But from his standpoint, the person who's had this experience, he feels that they look funny, that they don't understand, that there isn't any problem at all, that he has seen from where he stands, that the meaning of being alive is just being alive. And it's so plain, and it's so obvious, and so simple. And yet here is everybody rushing around in a great panic, as if it were necessary for them to achieve something beyond all that. And the funny thing is, they're not quite sure what it is. But they are devilishly intent upon it, after that thing. And so, to the person in the state of consciousness, which I call mystical, that all seems very weird, very absurd.
Has been talking about the mystical and how we feel union with the universe, nature, and other human beings. Now we're going to present the mystical as certain events that happen in our lives. As Rod Serling used to say every week, I submit this for your perusal.
It's the same kind of story that seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide, at least half of a playing field. Because there's no explaining. See and feel. Somebody likes me. You got me. You're hypnotized. Now it's not a meaningless question. Ask if they've been and gone. I remember a talk about North Carolina. Strange, strange poem.
see the sides were like glass in the thick of a forest without a road. And if any man's hand ever made that land, then I think it would have showed. And that's why it seems like a dream. They got me hypnotized. That's right. Down in Mexico, where a man can fly over mountains and hills. And he don't need an airplane or some kind of engine, and he never will. Now you know it's a meaningless question to ask, cause those stories are right. Cause what matters most is the feeling you get. When it seems like a dream, they got you hypnotized. Your body has nothing.
The officers who rescued the Utah toddler from death's doorstep in a submerged car on Sunday said their adrenaline-fueled heroics were triggered by a mysterious plea. We could see a person in the front seat, and then we heard a voice saying, "Help me, we're in here." It was clear as day, said Officer Tyler Beddoes of the Spanish Fork Police Department. He's one of four men who pulled an unconscious 18-month-old from a car which had been submerged in near-freezing water for 14 hours as her mother lay dead in the driver's seat. Beddoes and his fellow first responders braved the chilly waters long enough to turn the red Dodge sedan, which was upside down, and pull little Lily Grosbeck out of her car seat in which she had been suspended since her mother, Jennifer Grosbeck, apparently lost control of the car the previous evening. We could see her eyes fluttering, so there was some life, but as far as movements or consciousness, there was nothing that we could see, Beddoes told the Daily News on Monday. The four officers and three firefighters formed an assembly line and transported the child back to shore. The first responders started performing CPR, and Lily later gained consciousness in a Salt Lake City hospital. Her condition was upgraded to stable on Monday. Jennifer Grosbeck, 25, was driving home in Springville, but when crossing the bridge in Spanish Fork, the single mom hit a cement barrier and drove off the roadway, police said. The vehicle crashed into the river around 10:30 p.m., according to a witness who told police he heard the accident. The car was not visible from the roadway and was not discovered until 14 hours later when a fisherman spotted it at 2:24 12:24 p.m. Saturday and called police. That's when Beddoes and his partners arrived. The witness told them that he could see an arm through the window, and the four men plunged into the freezing rapids to see if they could find any survivors. Then, suddenly, they started hearing the distinct sound of a woman's voice calling them to help. We replied, "Hang in there, we're trying what we can." The voice motivated them to push harder because they believed there may be someone inside who was still alive. With their adrenaline pumping, they pulled the heavy water-filled car onto its side and discovered the driver was dead. The officers had no explanation for the mysterious voice that appeared to come from inside the car. Beddoes said that he wouldn't believe it really happened had not the other officers heard it as well. "I don't know what I thought I heard," he said. "I'm not a typically religious guy. It's hard to explain. It was definitely something. Where and why it came from, I'm not sure." The little girl was hanging upside down, but her head was not touching the water. The responders did not even see her initially, but when they got the car turned over, they spotted her and raced to get her out. Grossbeck, the youngest of five children, was enrolled at Provo College and hoped to become a medical assistant. Her sister Jill Sanderson told this to KSL-TV in Salt Lake City. "She was a very compassionate and very loving person and always willing to bend over backwards for loved ones," she told the station. "Her baby was the love of her life. She was an amazing mother." They set up a GoFundMe page to raise money for her funeral expenses and Lily's medical treatment. The child was being treated at Primary Children's Hospital, where her condition was stable and improving, a spokeswoman said on Monday. "She is doing remarkably well considering the circumstances. Doctors have been hopeful so far," Sanderson told reporters. "We would like to express our appreciation to the Spanish Fork rescue team for saving this baby's life." Beddoes, who spent 20 minutes in the frigid waters, said he and his colleagues were so focused on the rescue, they didn't even realize the impact the water was having on their bodies. The 6-foot-tall officer said the water level was often at his neck, sometimes higher. "I didn't even feel the cold. I was not paying attention to myself. After several minutes in the water, I started to feel the effects." The four officers and three firefighters were treated for hypothermia and released Saturday night. Police are still trying to determine what caused the accident. Spanish Fork Lieutenant Matt Johnson told the Daily News that there were no skid marks or evidence of evasive maneuvers at the bridge. A toxicology report on Jennifer Grossbeck is pending. "The men who jumped into the water to save the infant should be commended," Johnson said. "It's a very courageous effort on their part," he added. "They were willing to risk their lives and enter the water to make sure there was no other occupants in the vehicle. This is what public service is about."
Good morning, I'm Lindy Fisher. So, on this topic, I had something that happened to me many years ago when I was around 20. So it was a long time ago. It was an odd and fleeting experience, but I never forgot about it. I had been going through a rough time, not really anything really big, but to me as a 20-year-old, it was difficult and I was feeling badly. So, I was walking to school through the city with my friend, feeling very low and upset, and suddenly everything around me started to glow, actually shimmer. The streets, the buildings, the people, everything. Everything was still there, but it was transformed, and a feeling of complete peace came over me. I must say, the theme for the month is wonder. I must say the experience was full of wonder. It was a long time ago, so I can't really remember how long it lasted. Maybe it was 30 seconds, maybe it was a minute, maybe it was 5 minutes, I don't remember. And I don't remember much after that, just that life went back to normal. It didn't transform my life in any way, and it never happened again, but I never did forget it. I don't know if it was a mystical experience. Maybe it was a hallucination, or as Sandy Beckius suggested last week, a cerebral hemorrhage. But looking back on it and framing it in the light of some spiritual leanings that I now have, maybe it was a window into another realm. When it happened, I was feeling very vulnerable. My defenses were way down, so maybe that allowed some window to open. I wonder. So I think I've just shared that experience only once before, so I appreciate your listening. I am curious about it. Maybe I'll share one more thing that may or may not be related to mysticism. So I've been trying to meditate for years, and I'm pretty bad at it. I've never been able to focus real well. My mind wanders a lot. I always would try to keep the thoughts and images away, trying to keep my mind clear on nothing. And then Larry Pierce, our former minister, mentioned once to pay attention to the images when you meditate. And I thought, well, geez, I thought I was supposed to not focus on the images. So I started to pay attention to the fleeting images that I previously was not focusing on, and I found that they were actually pretty interesting and seemed like, well, maybe they're spiritual messages. I'm not at all an artist, but I decided to draw the images. Writing is my usual mode, but I mean, that only would capture words, not images, so that wouldn't work in this circumstance. So many of the images seem to be of different realms. The first was a glowing, shimmering tree, kind of shimmering like that other experience, that was alive and being pulled along, roots and everything. Many of them alluded to a hidden reality, like peeling back a veil to find the light, seeing what's on the other side, other realms hiding behind curtains, trying to reach across a divide to get to something on the other side, pushing a door open, or seeing everything crystal clear and beautiful at the end of a long, narrow, dark tunnel. So that went on for a couple of years with maybe 30 drawings. In the past year or so, I've gotten nothing. But the images that I did get during that time period were interesting. To me, it supports the notion that we may occasionally get windows into other realms. And I'll end with, I wonder.
This is my mystical experience. I've had a few, but this is the one I want to share. I am a huge Doctor Who fan. I think if you look at me, really? Be surprised. Since the show aired on public TV in the 80s. Once when I was in my 30s, I donated money during a pledge drive to support public TV and specifically the Doctor Who program. For this donation, I was to receive a gift of a TARDIS coffee mug. If you don't know what a TARDIS is, I will describe it for you. It looks like this. It is the vehicle that the doctor travels in. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. It travels through time and space. I know it doesn't look aerodynamic, but it doesn't have to be. It travels by dematerializing from this spot and then materializing in another location. The reason I'm telling you this is the coffee mug was to simulate this action. There's an image of the TARDIS on the mug. When you pour hot water into it, the image disappears. When the mug cools down, the image then reappears. I was really jazzed to get that. Remember, I was in my 30s. It was supposed to arrive in 3 months after the pledge drive was over. 4 months passed by, and my coveted TARDIS coffee mug had not arrived. I was a cynical and angry young man back then, and a bit paranoid. I've endured lost packages in the mail and mistakes made by suppliers, and I felt that one of these snafus had happened to me again. The difference this time is that I was steaming. I was tired of incompetence, of people taking my orders and not delivering them. I was going to get back at them. I called the same phone number I ordered at the public ordered from at the public television station. No one answered it. I figured it was just a number they used during the pledge drives only, but did not use it during the rest of the year. But I was going to get back at them anyhow. Although no one was answering the phone, someone surely was going to hear it ringing. So I was going to leave the phone ring and disturb the heck out of someone. That's how I was going to get my revenge. No one will pick up the phone, then let them listen to the constant ringing. Completely satisfied with my plan, I decided not to let this ruin my day, so I went to get a haircut at Joe the Barber, about 4 miles from my home. During my visit at Joe the Barber's, I was brimming with satisfaction at the stunt that I had pulled. Denying me my TARDIS mug, they didn't know who they were fooling with. As I left the barber shop, I walked towards my car, got in, and the car wouldn't start. There was no sound when I turned my key. That's not good. I had been having trouble with starting my car lately, and the dealership couldn't find what the problem was. So I went back into Joe's barbershop and politely asked Joe if I could use his phone. I would need to call my father to pick me up. When I made the call to home, I got an intermittent buzzing sound. Oh crap, that's right, I left the phone off the hook. Now I'll have to walk home. I walked 4 miles of Ridge Pike in the summer heat. I approached my street and walked towards it. Ah, you did it, Butch, you're almost there. As I got closer to my home, I saw a small square white box about the size of a coffee mug sitting on the ground at my front door. This moment has had a profound effect on me. I then realized that there was more to the universe than I thought.
service now called Matters of the Heart, where we give members of our community who have a joy that is lifting them up or a sorrow that is weighing them down a chance to share. And while we give folks a moment to gather their thoughts, we'll have a brief musical interlude here, and then we'll move into sharing both together in the sanctuary and on Zoom for those who care to participate, and all are welcome to do so. So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. Typically, we would have a song, but as we're running a little over, we are going to hop past that and continue on with our service.
Now we will have our closing words. The title is Into Greater Union with the Mysterious. And they were written by Reverend Joan Javier Duval. Spirit of life, mother of all, mystery beyond our understanding. Here we are, living, breathing creatures with minds that wonder and hearts that feel awe. We face questions that we know can't be answered and tragedies that we know can't be explained. May we find patience in all that is unanswered and peace in all that will never be explained. Here we are, living, breathing creatures with open minds and tender hearts. May we hold ourselves with gentleness, with all that brings us worry and all that makes our hearts break. May the living, breathing creatures that we are feel the breath of life moving in us and through all things, bringing us into greater union with the mysterious universe of which we are a part. Blessed be. Amen. We extinguish our chalice, but not the light that is in our hearts that we will take out into the world with us. We will have our closing song, The Oneness of Everything, by Jim Scott, who's written a lot of the songs in our hymnal.